Welcome to another edition of the weekly, daily fantasy football podcast. I am your host, Keith Fleming. With me, as always, the man with all the stats, Joe Matz. Joe, what's going on?
Just grieving my loss at the shit bowl between our two teams.
Yeah, I don't know who was rooting harder, you for your Giants to win or me for my Falcons to lose, because I think it's going to be a little for naught, but that doesn't really matter. Before we start this real quickly, I want to remind everyone that this podcast, the Weekly Daily Fantasy Football Podcast, is available on the IB Sports Podcast Network, which is available on iTunes, Spotify, and Anchor. Please be sure to subscribe, rate, review, and share the litany of podcasts that are on that network. Week four of Daily Fantasy. Before we get into our plays, Joe, I think we're at a point, right? We talked about this last week, where you can start looking at trends and defenses, offenses, they're especially coming in this week. Because now we got three games where a team maybe has struggled against the run or the pass, or their defense is just bad. And these were the three observations that are a little bit different from last year, or just, I think, can surprise people. The first is Washington's D is legit bad. Like, last year was smoke and mirrors. I didn't even realize. I think I heard it first on the Simmons podcast. They played, I think it was like either eight rookie quarterbacks or journeyman quarterbacks last year. And that obviously spiced up their defense. But I mean, this year they have been terrible with the resurgence of Josh Allen. Nothing will get you right now like playing the Washington defense.
Yeah, it's surprising. But like you said, they were a little overvalued last year coming in. You know, they added William Jackson. He was supposed to help shore up that defensive backfield, but they've been kind of a mess back there. If they don't get pressure, people are lighting them up.
And Chase Young doesn't look like the guy a lot of people thought he was. And that's no disrespect to Chase Young. He's still a good player, but people are trying to put
there.
Him.
You know, right. It's only year two, but that defensive line as a whole has been a little bit disappointing. But out of the four guys on it, he's clearly leading the pack and the guys that you want to see more out of. Well, you want to see more out of if you're a Washington fan.
That's my one scare this week with Atlanta, who I like a lot of their players, but our line is bad, and I can see Chase Young getting right this week. All right, the second thing, these teams are great on offense. They're good football teams, but they have a huge weakness in their defense. For the Chargers, Chiefs, and Seahawks, it's their ability to stop the run. I mean, Seattle, a week after Derrick Henry ran for literally like 1,000 yards, Minnesota's backup, Madison, who's a good running back, but he goes for over 100. The Chargers allowed Edwards-Helaire to go over 100 yards on the ground. That's his first 100-yard game since week six of last season and third of his career. And the Chiefs have given up north of 5 yards per carry to every running back they faced. There's six of them this season with at least six carries against them. They're all giving up north of 155 yards per game. Again, if we're going to target teams with a weakness, these three teams are weak against the run, and it seems to be the weakness for their teams just in general moving forward is they got great offenses, but you can control the clock and kind of keep the ball away if you can really establish that run.
Yeah. But like I said, even more so, I think, sometimes in the pass defenses, when you're looking at the run game, you really want to find those right matchups. Just because, you know, if a team gets down, they're going to pass, and that can overcome a bad matchup. But running is just, you really got to look for that matchup and target those bad teams over and over again.
Especially in games you think are going to be competitive. And then to that nature, the third thing is similar. There's 3 2-1 teams in Dallas, Baltimore, and Tampa that, again, can score on offense. They're great at stopping the run, but their defenses, you should target quarterbacks, wide receivers, even tight ends in situations. All three are giving up north of 313 yards or more per game through the air. Only 5 teams in the league are averaging over 300. Dallas and Tampa are both giving up 330+. And what's scary for particularly Dallas is they've been in close games until this week. Tampa, obviously, this week got blown out. But, I mean, you can throw at will at those secondaries.
Yeah, and that's obviously a combination of, well, Tampa's also just beat up in the secondary right now.
Yep.
So as long as that's going on, all the more reason to target them.
But it's also a rollover, right? Like, I mean, they were really bad down the stretch last year. They kind of sort of shored it up during the playoff run. But, I mean, they had that stretch going into the playoffs where, I mean, it was awful.
Well, also that Tyreek game, that was a game where Jamal Dean was out, and he's the quicker of the corners. And he's out again right now. And so that just magnifies everything. Tampa's really just a perfect team, though, where even when they are all healthy, the run defense is so good and their offense is so good that there's a reason that teams are passing like 50 times a game against them.
Absolutely. But again, these are the kind of things to me you should start looking at now, because, you know, for the first couple of weeks, okay, you want to say that's not really a trend. It could depend on the opponent, et cetera. When you get into three games and teams are giving up, you know, 330 yards to the air, 170 yards on the ground, you should just check that out. And if you like a player on one of the teams they're playing, don't hesitate to use them. Getting into the picks, overall, I was not crazy about this slate. I don't feel quite as good as I did the last couple of weeks, but I still think there's some guys that you can make a case for. My top quarterback is Jalen Hurts at 6,900 versus Kansas City. I don't love any of the top tier guys. Like, I think that there's several of them that could have big games, but it also wouldn't shock me if they end up not having the kind of game you need if you're going to be paying $7,000 or more for a quarterback. So when in doubt, go with the guy who can run. Hurts been great fantasy-wise. He scored 19 or more in six of the seven games he started over the last two seasons. He scored 28 points in a blowout over Atlanta. He looked great in that game. To me, the important one was he scored 21.8 points in a game. They scored 11 points in week two and looked awful, but he still, you know, cracked 20 points. And then 25.5 points in the game just Monday. It was really never close. They only scored 21 points. Most of his 25 came way after the game was out of hand, actually just in the fourth quarter. He already has 179 yards and a touchdown on the ground this year. That's averaging 8 points per game just running the ball. That's, to me, what makes Hurts so appealing each week, as long as he's not too overpriced. And I feel like 6,900 is still kind of in that range. And just remember that Lamar ran for 107 yards and two touchdowns versus the exact Chiefs defense. I expect the Chiefs to be angry. I expect them to score at will. I think this game could easily turn into the exact same situation we saw Monday night, where in the second half, the Eagles are just flinging it, you know, basically down double-digit points. That's all good things for Hurts. The Chiefs D is dead last in rushing touchdowns, second to last in yards allowed on the ground, and 26 in rushing attempts. I think Hurts is at a fair price, and his floor is just really high here, with the potential of, you know, say they score, I don't know, 14, 20 points in the second half and, you know, garbage times. I do think there's no way the Chiefs lose this game. I think they're going to play, you know, with their backs against the wall, and that's all good news for Hurts at 6,900.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said, which is why Jalen Hurts is also my pick. I think we're going to have a little more crossover this week because, again, we did not totally love this slate. The only thing I'll add is, yeah, because of that, I think you're going to see a pretty heavy amount of passes for Hurts. And I don't think that really takes away from the amount he runs. He's going to run no matter what. Both times he's thrown 30-plus passes this year, he's topped 260 yards, had multiple passing scores. Kansas City, I do think you're right. They're going to be motivated. That probably will show up more on the offensive end. Like you said, this is a bad defense. 32nd against QBs on DraftKings. Dead last in passing defense DVOA. This is perfectly set up for him to do well. If you're looking for alternates, I would say, you know, right now you can't go wrong with Matthew Stafford against Arizona. That's going to be a shootout. And then if you're playing the Monday night game, I like Justin Herbert against the Raiders. But I think I like Hurts a little bit more than both, and he's $100 cheaper. So,
yeah, I don't hate Carr either on Monday night if we're going to talk about the guys on Monday. Why don't you go with your mid-tier since we had the same top tier?
Well, like you said, I just threw Carr in because I do like him on Monday. And I think a decent number of people play the Sunday-Monday games. Hopefully you did that week I told you to play Aaron Jones. But
yep.
Carr's hit 25 points or more in all three games. It's why he's fourth right now in DraftKings among QBs. Again, you get that bonus for if you hit 300 yards. He's easily hit that all three games. He leads the league in passing yards at 401 yards per game. Sure, part of that is he's thrown more passes than everyone except Tom Brady. But he also has the highest PFF passing grade among QBs outside of Tom Brady.
They've won all those games too, right?
And so they've won all those games. Down,
like, big.
Now, I do think you'll probably see a little bit more balance in this game just because the Chargers are weaker against the run. But, and, you know, they've played pretty well against the pass. They held Dak without a TD pass. Mahomes threw two picks. But like I said, I think this game's a shootout. And if it's a shootout, Carr's going to be flinging it. And he's only 5,900. Again, he's the number four quarterback right now in DraftKings on the year in average points. But he's like the number, I didn't count it out. But I'd say at 5,900, he's got to be like 14 or something.
Yeah, so, I owe Chucky an apology. They all look great.
Probably.
I mean, they look great. They really do. I'm shocked the stuff they're doing on offense. He's making Carr look great. And just remember, he was a quarterback guru way back in the day. That kind of got forgotten once he became a head coach and stuff. But that's his background. My middle tier guy is Sam Darnold, 6,100 at Dallas. He's been one of the real pleasant surprises this year. He scored at least 20 points in each game. He's thrown for 300 yards in the last two. He has really surprisingly three rushing touchdowns on the season. So they're letting him run inside the goal line. And now McCaffrey's out. So with that injury, I just think Darnold's going to be asked to do a lot more. Dallas D has been a pleasant surprise, particularly against the run and giving up total points. But they've given up 300 yards in each game to opposing quarterbacks. Carolina, I think, is going to have real trouble getting the run going. And that's just going to, again, going to lead to Darnold throwing a lot at 6,100 in a game where I think Carolina's D is going to be exposed a little bit. If you look at who they've played, they've played no offense anywhere near this Dallas Cowboys offense. Not saying they're not a good defense, but I'm just saying for the people that, you know, they've been scoring double-digit points pretty much every game. I think that ends here, and I just think that for Carolina to win this game, Darnold's going to have to throw. I mean, he's throwing 35 times in wins. I expect him to throw at least 40 times. I could see that number get to 50 if they don't jump on this team early. And I just think at this price, he's a pretty safe play. I really like Darnold at 6,100 and stacking him with the guy I'll talk about later, DJ Moore.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a believer in general in this Panthers team and their defense. But, you know, they're another team that's gotten banged up in the secondary. They just made a trade with the Jags to bring in, well, I can blank it on his name, the corner who I did not believe in the draft a year ago.
The number eight pick from last year. I mean, it's a bold move by the Jags.
It's kind of a shocking trade. But that's also how desperate Carolina is right now.
But just remember, they played the Texans, Jets, and Saints. So they've yet to face, in my opinion, a stout offense. Even in the Saints' big win, their offense didn't really do a lot of special teams.
And the Cowboys are not a team you want to be shorthanded.
No.
With your DBs. Nope. It's going to be a problem. So, yeah, I like that pick. Going down to my lower tier guy. And this is only 200 lower than Carr, but honestly, I kind of hated the lower tier guys. I thought about Matt Ryan, but then I was like, it feels more like this is the week Washington gets right than Atlanta.
Yep.
Obviously what happened with Chicago last week, regardless of who their QB is, that scared me out. So I'm going Teddy Bridgewater, 5,700 against Baltimore. Teddy's topped 20 points twice. And while he only scored 11.8 last week, a lot of that was just because of the game they were in. The Jets were not threatening to score at all. And even in that game, he didn't throw for a score, but 235 yards on only 25 passes. Very efficient. He has not turned the ball over once this season so far. I do think Baltimore is a defense where they're better than their stats, having played Kansas City and the Raiders already. But Marcus Peters is still on IR. They've struggled to get consistent pressure. Their sack rate is in the bottom 10 in the league. And I expect the Ravens to force the Broncos into a little bit more of a pass-heavy game plan than they've had so far this year. I do think this Broncos defense is really good as well, but I think Lamar is going to put up enough points where Teddy's not going to be throwing the ball only 25 times this week.
I agree. My low tier, a lot of the same reasons as Taylor Heinicke, 5,900 in Atlanta. This will be short. He scored 23 or more points in both his starts this season. He scored 23 points against one of the besties in football just this last week against Buffalo. And now he gets my awful Falcons. Even with Jones only scoring 16 points last week, quarterbacks are averaging 25-plus points versus my Falcons D. Arguably, my favorite stack this week is Heinicke and Thomas for just over 10K. He's eclipsed over 300 yards passing in two of his last three starts. And Jalen Hurts looked all world versus my Falcons. I mean, he hasn't looked great since. I actually think Heineke's looked pretty good this season. I mean, I don't think you really put that loss on Sunday on him. He's moved the ball pretty well. And again, the Falcons have really struggled with big athletic receivers. Look at Evans and Gronk. That's why I really like Logan Thomas, like especially in the red zone. We just don't have anybody to cover him. But I really like Heineke at 5,900. And I think if you're going to do it, pair him with Thomas, who I'll bring up again as my top tight end.
Yeah, despite my Giants' lack of productivity against that Falcons defense last week, I will not tell anyone to stay away from that Falcons D.
Losing receivers. I mean, we have issues, to say the least. All right, moving on to running back. I went pretty far down. It's almost the exact same case. Like Henry, I like this week. Kamara, I also like this week, but they're just so expensive that I can't really okay giving them unless you really have a lineup you like and can find the money there, but not start with that. So Montgomery at 5,800 versus Detroit. The Lions run D is still terrible. We beat on it all last year. We saw what a pass catching back could do against them in week two when Aaron Jones scored four touchdowns, three were through the air. This is a must win for the Bears and their coach, Matt Nagy. I think regardless of who the starter is, Montgomery's going to see 20 plus carries. The Lions D is bad enough for me to go all in on Montgomery at this price. He's averaged just south of 100 total yards in two games last year versus Detroit and scored three touchdowns. He's going to get 20 touches. I don't see any way there's a script involved that he is not heavily involved in this game against a bad defense. And at 5,800, I think that's a good bargain.
I mean, yeah, looking at that one, like the only part of that offense that's looked functional so far is Montgomery. So if you're not going to lean on him, especially in a winnable game, then I got to assume Matt Nagy's trying to be the first Bears coach to get fired.
He's got a big bet on first coach fired,
which the Bears have never done in the history of their franchise over 100 years. So if he pulls it off, hats off to him, I guess. It's troubling. I feel a little bit like a dick for this guy being my top running back, but like you said, if you've got the money, I'm not, you know, Kamara and Henry, sure. I didn't love anything this week, so I'm actually going with the Thursday matchup. So, hey, like I said, I don't like a lot of the guys this week, so I think there's maybe something to be done where if you do a Thursday through Sunday, Thursday through Monday one, get some of these Thursday and Monday guys in there. I got Joe Mixon, 6,500 against Jacksonville. I think if you're playing any Thursday thing, he's got to be in your lineup. He's second only to Derrick Henry in touches this season. And he's facing the team that's second only to Seattle in how many runs they see per game from running backs, which Seattle being dead last also has something to do with Derrick Henry. But the Jags are not actually that bad against the run. They're worse against the pass. But again, they're seeing 28-plus runs per game from opposing running backs. And Joe Mixon is, you know, the clear number one. This is not a timeshare at all. He's going to see 20-plus carries in this game. And that's the reason the Jags are 30th against running backs on DraftKings. Only the Ravens have given up more rushing touchdowns to backs on the ground. I'll be shocked if he doesn't grind his way to 20-plus because this Jags team is awful. The Bengals defense, I'm going to mention them later. So give me the running back in a game. They're going to be up like the whole time against a defense that can't stop anybody. Like if Jamar Chase happens to finally get tackled on the 1 yard line this week, that's just another touchdown for Joe Mixon.
Yeah, when you're down all the time, teams run on you. And the Jags, I think, with the exception of maybe the little time after the returned baffling field goal attempt on Sunday, yeah, they've been down pretty much this entire season. Elijah Mitchell, 5,400, is my mid-tier versus Seattle. One thing that was very apparent in the Niners' loss to the Packers in week three, Trey Sermon is not what many, myself included, thought he was. He just looks average. Like, we've now seen him in a couple of games. Mitchell looks, I mean, so much more important. They need Mitchell for this very important division game. He's on track to play in Seattle. And again, Seattle is every bit as bad against the run as the Lions D that he shredded in week one, scoring 19.4 points. For those saying I'm being harsh comparing Seattle D to Detroit, again, Madison last week, 32 touches, 171 yards. Derrick Henry, 41 touches, 237 yards in week two. And even Jonathan Taylor had 23 touches for 116 yards in week one, and he's done nothing since then. So you can run on this Seattle team. I think the Niners need to run the ball to win this game. I expect Mitchell to be the guy getting that opportunity against a really bad run D. Again, check to make sure he's cleared to play. But if he is, I have no doubt Mitchell will be the lead back in this very important game.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think from what we've seen so far, Mitchell looks like he is going to be the guy, at least for the foreseeable future. My mid-tier guy is a guy that I know you're going to mention later in the flex portion. Not much less expensive than my top-tier guy. And that's DeAndre Swift at 6,200 against the Bears. Swift is just, he does the thing that we always talk about. It's why we love Austin Eckler on this podcast. He's getting an incredible amount of targets. He had 11 in week one, which is just insane. 23 targets on the season and 19 receptions. So that's just 19 points. So that's over 6 points per game purely by catching the ball, not even going anywhere with it, just catching it. His target share, I can't remember if it's, I think it's last week, was the highest of anyone, even higher than Devontae Adams. Like per route run, to be sure. Mm-hmm. But he's getting targeted last week on over half the routes he ran, he got targeted. So he's seeing the ball an incredible amount. And then you throw in, I expect we're going to see more of a balance, more of a rush-heavy attack against the Chicago Bears than the Lions have generally had, because this is a game that they're not overmatched in.
Yep.
So if you're going to spot him 15 carries and then you're going to add in 6 or 7 receptions. I think he's a top 10 play this week at running back, and you're getting him at 6,200. So I'm all in on him.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm gonna go ahead and just add what I was gonna say about him. I also love him. He's coming off again a 21 touch performance. He scored 23 points, and then his head coach said after that publicly, they need to use Swift more. And this is exactly what we saw happen last year with him, where his first, I think it was like 3 or 4 games, they were giving him like just not enough touches, honestly. And they started ramping it up and giving him 15 to 20 touches per game. And he had a stretch for about 8 weeks before he was injured where he was one of the highest points per game running backs in the league. And it just looks like Detroit has realized that earlier than they did last year. And they know this is our best chance of winning and being competitive in games. And then this Bears defense is pretty good. They're not awful by any means, but I think Darrell Henderson is in a lot of ways DeAndre Swift light, and he had 18 touches for 88 yards and a score week one. And again, at 6,200, I would take that. And what I love about Swift, and I think kind of what you're getting at, is he can go boom at any point. He's one of those guys that can take any reception or any rush to the house. And I mean, he could easily top 20 points. I mean, he's had games where he's gone north of 30 in his first year and a half. So I love that. My low tier is my man Cordell Patterson, 4,800 versus Washington. Until they raise the price, I'm going to keep playing him, Joe. Right. Arthur Smith's offense has not looked great. It's been extremely disappointing for Falcons fans like myself, but he has unleashed Cordell Patterson in a manner that no other coach thus far have been able to figure out. In his last two games, he's secured 11 of 14 targets. He's gotten 7 targets in both of the last two games. He's turned those 11 receptions into 149 yards and a score. He also still averages 7 carries per game. He's had 7 in both of the last two games as well. So he's getting 14 touches, basically 14 looks. And he's had at least 1 red zone carry in both of them. So you have that going for you too, where they're still utilizing him in the red zone. So, again, I'm just going to keep playing Patterson until they raise the price, because he's kind of reminiscent of like the James White type guys when they're having those big years where you just know they're going to get probably 4 to 7 receptions. And at 4,800, I'm just looking for north of 10 points. And I think Patterson can get that. And he also has the ability to obviously explode, because he's also a speedster, could take any play to the house.
No, I'm with you. I picked him up in one of my season long leagues because I'm like, you know, ideally I'm not playing him in season long, but one, you know, once these bye weeks come around, a couple injuries happen, he's a guy who's going to get you that 10 points plus because he's just going to see enough targets, enough runs. He's involved. My lower tier guy, I feel risky doing it because I don't think I would question anyone recommending a Buffalo Bills running back, but that's exactly what I'm going to do.
Dude, Zach Moss has been great.
Yeah, it's Zach Moss. And this one's pretty simple. Houston's giving up 5 yards per carry, and they're 17-point dogs. So even a team as pass-happy as the Bills, you got to assume the second half we're going to see plenty of running. And Moss is – he was out week one, week two – he was getting the red zone play. And when week three, he now is getting more snaps than Singletary. And no one outside of Derrick Henry has seen more carries inside the 10-yard line the last 2 weeks. So he's got the clear red zone opportunity. He seems like he might be taking the lead as the overall number one back. I wouldn't guarantee that. It's probably going to have balance outside of the red zone. But this week, I don't really think it matters against Houston. There's a chance that maybe even both of running backs are playable, depending. But I like him a lot at 5,300 because I think you're getting a touchdown. And you could see this could be a hot season high for carries in this game.
Yeah, I can't co-sign Singletary, but I'll definitely co-sign Moss. Singletary's dead to me. There's been too many weeks that I'm like, he's so cheap. He never does anything. But I like the way Moss has looked. He has looked like the back that they drafted, which was to be the physical back that was going to kind of help them, you know, loosen up defenses for obviously the high powered, you know, passing game that they got. And it looks like it's finally getting around to that. For the receivers, I'm going to go with Calvin Ridley. He's too cheap. 7,000 versus Washington. Washington D has been exposed. The top three receiving options are averaging. This is average per game against Washington right now. 28 targets, 19 receptions, 226 yards, and over a touchdown. There's been four on the season versus the secondary. I think that's good news for Ryan, Ridley, Pitts, Patterson. Again, my one concern would be if the pass rush gets to him. But no matter what, Ridley is going to be getting the ball in bunches. I mean, I just think at 7K, he's a bargain. He's still seeing over 10 targets a game. He's corralled 15 receptions in the last 2 weeks. He's been historically great at home. And, again, he scores touchdowns. I know he only has one on the year this year, but Ridley has historically scored touchdowns. I think he's going to get one this week. I think you'll see him start scoring on a more regular basis. And they really kind of adjusted the last 2 weeks where they're now moving him into – where Ryan is not taking his deep drops to get the ball to Ridley. He's running a lot shorter routes, which is obviously not the most effective way to use him, but it is going to guarantee he's going to get receptions, targets, looks, all that stuff, and can be involved where he really wasn't in week one, but he really has the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, Calvin Ridley's having a big game. Like, there's zero doubt about it. I'm not sure exactly what's going wrong with the offense, Matt Ryan. I don't know if it's just teams are shutting down the deep ball or Ryan's reluctant to throw it, but that's obviously been an issue for Ridley. But if they can protect Ryan on just a few key plays, this is a great opportunity for Calvin Ridley. I believe this is another one of your flex guys, but DJ Moore at 6,600. I just think this is just too low for DJ Moore at this point, especially against Dallas. Like, DJ's lows for the year are 6 receptions, 79 yards, and 8 targets. His lowest game is 15.4 points, the worst game he's done. He's averaging 20.3 points, and he's only scored one touchdown. Because sometimes you'll see these guys like, oh, this guy's going off. The guy caught 3 touchdowns, and the rest of it, everything else is telling you he's due for some reversion back towards lower scoring. DJ Moore is not. This guy is consistent. He's a top 15. I'd say that's low end. He's a top 15 receiver in the NFL now. Darnold's got it working with him. This Dallas defense does not seem like the one equipped to stop him. You mentioned them earlier with their struggles against the pass. 26th against wide receivers this year. PFF gives DJ Moore the fifth biggest wide receiver advantage against the DBs he'll face this week. I'm all in on DJ. Thank God I have him in one of my season-long leagues because I love him.
He's the surprising guy this year. I'll go ahead and again go over this. He's a number one receiver right now, like in fantasy. He is a legit number one receiver. He's the unquestioned number one target of a receiver. I mean, it's a lot to me. It reminds on obviously a lesser extent, but a lot like Cup with Stafford that they've just made a connection. And I mean, I actually thought Anderson would be the guy that would make a connection with Darnold because of their past history, but it's the opposite. I love like what you said about the 79 yards at least in each game. The 31 targets to me is the big deal, though. I mean, that's the kind of numbers that you're getting with the top guys, and at 6,600, I mean, you just you can't go wrong. And again, I just think without McCaffrey to win this game, they're going to have to throw, and that's going to mean that, I mean, DJ Moore has been getting 10 targets a game. I would not be surprised if he got like 15 in this game, and that's just going to make him more likely to go off, which is a good thing for all our listeners.
And real quick, because you mentioned surprises this year, another Monday one, I would not start fading Mike Williams yet. He leads the league in end zone targets. Great pick by Corey last week. And then Keenan Allen is now surprisingly low because of Mike Williams going off. If you're doing a Monday one, make sure you at least have one of those two guys in, because one of those guys, at least one of them, is going to wreck the Raiders.
I actually think with the targets that they've been getting consistently and they've both been eating, I don't know if Williams will continue to outscore Allen, but I think that both of them are guys that you can pretty much pencil in for 15-plus points almost every week, anywhere. And it's just price. OBJ is my mid-tier, 5,800 at Minnesota. This is, again, just a combo of the price the guy is and the amount of targets he's going to see. He saw 9 targets and a rushing attempt in his first game back last week. He's facing a Minnesota D that has struggled against number one receivers. Week one, rookie Jamar Chase in his first ever game after looking horrible all preseason, had 5 catches for 101 yards and a touchdown. DeAndre Hopkins had 4 catches for 54 yards and a touchdown. And then, for whatever reason, it became the Rondale Moore show. But, I mean, still, he had success early. And then Metcalf woke from his fantasy coma last week to have 6 receptions for 107 yards and a touchdown. I think just when everybody decided, okay, I'm going to take Tyler Lockett in all my lineups and not DK Metcalf. So right on time there. But I just think that the Browns running backs are going to be the focal point. But in the Bengals and Seahawks game, their run game averaged well over 5 yards per carry. But with OBJ being the one Browns healthy receiver, I just think that he's going to get targeted. You've heard Baker the entire time that him and OBJ have been together. Actually, in the beginning, sort of look, I think, makes some mistakes because he tries to force feed OBJ at times. I think he's still kind of doing that. If you looked at the game Sunday, which that may not be the best thing for the team, but it's awesome for fantasy owners because he's going to make an effort. They want to get this guy going. They know if Jarvis Landry comes back and OBJ is even 85% of what they traded for, this Browns team is, I mean, really scary on offense. So I think that's going to continue. It's a great matchup. Minnesota's giving up passing yards to everybody. So OBJ at 5,800.
Yeah, I'm all in with you on this one. If he was not on your list, he would have been on mine. I don't want to just copy all your picks, though. But I will say, to your point about how much he's getting targeted, he saw 180 air yards last week. Only Devontae Adams saw more. And that was 49% of the total air yards in the Browns offense. So it's clear Baker's ready to get it going with him. Hopefully it happens this week.
I wouldn't be surprised if he throws a pass either.
Yeah. The sweep touchdown run last week last year against the Cowboys was a thing of beauty. So hopefully, Stefanski can get creative. That's for sure. I'm going all the way down to 5,300. And I can't say production wise, there's much reason to be loving this guy, but I'm going Robert Woods against Arizona. He's only scoring 10.4 points per game so far this year, but he's seen a decent 19 targets. He's still the clear number two if you look at snaps or routes behind Cooper Kupp. Cardinals are 20th against wide receivers. And I just have to assume the Cardinals are going to be putting more of a focus on stopping Kupp. There's going to be a big Robert Woods game soon. And I think this is just a great opportunity for it, because I think there's going to be a lot of points, a lot of passing. And so only 5,300. This is a guy who people were like, oh, this is a top 20 receiver going into this year. And I don't even think he's done anything wrong. It's just Kupp's been so good. So I think you get him all the way down at 5,300, where that's usually kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel. You get a guy with this talent. I'm going Robert Woods.
Do you hate the DeSean Jackson back-to-back weeks? Because he's real cheap, and the Cardinals have been known to give up some big plays through the air.
I mean, I can't hate it, because what's his price? I assume it's in the 4,000.
Yeah, it was like, I think, 4,400 or 4,500.
Right, at that price, it's hard to ever hate DeSean Jackson. I would just think, you know, people need to keep in mind that he's the number four wide receiver if you look at pretty much any metric.
But he can do something unique. I mean, right. For what their offense does, and we saw it last week with how good they are at moving the ball and, you know, throwing it all over the place, and with Stafford's arm, I'm just saying, don't be afraid to, like, I think if DeSean Jackson stays healthy, he's going to have those games every couple of weeks where all of a sudden you're like, holy crap, DeSean Jackson has four catches for 140 yards and two touchdowns.
And he only needs, at like 4,400, he only needs to hit on one. If he catches one 50-yard touchdown, you've got 12 points. And everything after that's gravy.
Yeah, so. I agree. The Jaguars last week actually had some success throwing. Trevor has, you know, not looked great, but I mean, Chenault, Shark, all their guys actually had summers. I think they all had about 50 yards receiving. So I'm not scared of that Arizona secondary. And Stafford he looks like the front runner for MVP. Corey Davis, my low tier, 5K versus his former team, which is also partly. Well, I just think it would be fitting if he goes banana against Tennessee. If you take away the New England game, which, again, that was one of those games that, I mean, New England was up. They were running the ball. They had time of possession. Zach Wilson couldn't stop throwing it to the other team. He's had five receptions at least in the other two games. Number one receivers have torched the Titans. They're averaging 24.8 points per game. Listen to the passing plays this Titans defense has given up this year. 36, 38, 63, 68, 36, and 27. We've only played three games. What is Davis known for? He's known for the big plays, right? I'd be shocked. I mean, again, they're giving up, and it was at least two in every game. I just think Davis busts a big one if it's for a touchdown. Again, at 5K, you're getting the value in Corey right there. And Tennessee's defense might be bad enough that Zach Wilson might look competent, you know, for running. He's a rookie. I'm not judging him as a quarterback overall, but just
very possible
so far, and for what the rookies have done this year. And Corey Davis is their unquestioned number one receiver. We talked about that. Is by far his favorite target, and I just think he might get a big play or two. And at 5,000, he's my low tier receiver.
Yeah, no, that Tennessee defense is awful. People should definitely be targeting guys playing against Tennessee. And we love Corey Davis on this podcast. So
big Corey Davis.
Definitely rooting for him. Down only $100 less than Robert Woods, and I probably like him a little bit more, is Jacoby Myers. He's 5,200 up against Tampa Bay. Obviously, you know, we talked about Tampa Bay. They've been giving up a lot of points to wide receivers, in part because teams have to throw against them. I don't think this week's going to be different. I assume the Patriots are not going to stop this Tampa Bay offense very well. And so that's going to lead to a lot of passes. And Jacoby Myers has been soaking them up. 19 receptions on 29 targets. So that's legit wide receiver one target share. And he's averaging less than 10 yards per reception. But it's been a little bit fluky. Last week, he had three deep targets. His 173 air yards were third in the NFL. So only behind, again, Devontae Adams and OBJ. Those are the only guys who saw more air yards. They just haven't found that connection yet. He also doesn't have a touchdown yet on 19 receptions of 29 targets. This is a guy who's very much due for a big game. And when you consider the amount of volume and how beat up that Tampa Bay defense is right now, I love Jacoby Myers at 5,200.
Yeah, he was one of my best guys that I drafted, and I think in like three of my four season-long leagues. I had heard good things about him. I didn't really trust any of the other Pats receivers, and I think he's underpriced right now, which is always good. You always want to get a guy before he gets expensive. The tight ends, I talked about him earlier. I love Logan Thomas, 4,900. Falcons have given up 15 receptions on 22 targets to tight ends this year for 187 yards and 3 touchdowns. Logan, much like last year, once Heinicke, you know, became the quarterback, he saw a huge uptick in targets. In those last two games that Heinicke started last year, which was, I know, the Bucks, and I forgot who they played in week 17, but he's seen, I think, at least 7 or more targets in all of those games. Just for instance, in week 1, for the first half that was almost completed by Ryan Fitzpatrick, Thomas saw 0 targets for 0 yards. In the 10 quarters with Heinicke since then, Thomas has seen 14 targets, caught 12 passes, 117 yards, and 1 touchdown. And I've watched every snap of my awful Atlanta Falcons defense. I've seen Gronk and Evans, both physical, you know, big targets, really, that they just have a nightmare guarding them. And I don't see how we're going to defend Thomas, especially in the red zone. I think Washington is going to be in the red zone. I think he's going to score a touchdown, 4,900. The rest of the tight ends are good plays above him, but they're so expensive. And I think Thomas both has the ability to potentially have a top 5 game, and you're getting him for so much cheaper. But also, just I think his floor, he's going to score double-digit points. I'd be shocked if he didn't on Sunday.
Yeah, I like that pick, and I'm just sticking with the same game. I like the tight ends here. I'm going back to the well. It didn't work out last week. Give me Kyle Pitts, right at that same general price range, 5,000. I remain flabbergasted as to how he got 0 targets until the fourth quarter against my Giants. Naturally, though, he caught like the biggest pass of the game to set up the winning field goal. So hopefully he'll continue to see those targets. Despite only seeing targets in the fourth quarter of our game, he saw 3 in that fourth quarter in the most important times of the game. And he's at 17 on the season. That's a very solid number. PFF has his matchups against this Washington defense as the third biggest advantage for a tight end after Travis Kelce and Rob Gronkowski this week. Like we said, this Washington defense, they've looked sketchy. They've given up big plays. And, you know, if it could be him and Calvin Ridley. If it's not Calvin Ridley, then he's the next most likely guy. I just think we're going to see, anytime Matt Ryan gets decent blocking this game, there's a good chance for a big play. And so I think Kyle Pitts, this is, I don't know if it's his big breakout game, but I think we're going to see like 15 points in this one.
Yeah, they've got to open it up. I mean, they really have not with him. It's been a little baffling, but, you know, he's also a rookie, so I understand that there's a transition. And but I haven't seen enough of him being moved all over the field. I'm hoping that starts this week because he's a nightmare matchup. But you gotta be a little bit less vanilla with him, which they have been kind of thus far. Noah Fant's my mid-tier at 4,300. Again, this is one of those easy ones. The Broncos receivers are falling like flies. I think you can make a serious argument that Fant is the number one receiver slash target going into this game with Baltimore Sunday. The Ravens run defense has held Josh Jacobs, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, DeAndre Swift, and Jamal Williams all to less than 3.5 yards per carry. So I know Denver likes to run the ball. I just don't think they're going to be able to. They're going to try to, don't get me wrong, but to win this game, kind of like with the Carolina deal, I think Teddy B is going to have to throw. As your point was saying earlier, I know last week we saw Hockenson only saw 2 targets and caught 2 passes, but don't forget in weeks 1 and 2, Waller and Kelce had, I mean, monstrous games versus this team where they were targeted a ton. If you do go with Teddy B, I don't hate, you know, doing a Patrick Sutton stack with him, but I also really do like a Teddy B and Fant stack for, I think it's under 10K, but Noah Fant's my mid-tier at 4,300.
Yeah, I'm co-signing this one. He's my mid-tier as well. I think, obviously, you know, there's the potential to get scared off. We were really big on Hockenson last week. That went down in flames. But I think the key difference here is the Ravens could just focus everything on Hockenson because the other threat was just Swift out of the backfield. There wasn't anything downfield that you were afraid of. Courtland Sutton and Tim Patrick are solid NFL wide receivers. They've proven that. So I don't think you can just focus everything on Noah Fant. And that's why he is going to be productive this week.
Completely agree. Baby Gronk is my low tier. Pat Freiermuth, however you say it.
This is your boy now. He's like officially your guy.
I like him. I like what I see. He's, again, 3,100. He's seen 9 targets, 7 receptions, 58 yards, and a score in weeks just 2 and 3. So, I mean, he's starting to get into that range of, you know, to me, that 8 to 12 tight end range, you know, consistently. And they're going to continue to give him more targets. They've gone up each game. Big Ben's arm is shot. And that's good for Najee Harris owners because I think, as you saw in the second half last week, Najee is going to be, you know, a lot of short passes to him where he gets creamed. And I think, you know, Freiermuth is going to eventually become another guy that's just a, you know, a short blanket, especially if Deontay Johnson continues to miss time, who also, you know, does a lot of short route passing. But I love Baby Gronk. I mean, I think that this dude's going to get more opportunity. And again, he's a great blocker, which just means he's going to be on the field more, you know, set up for play action, all that stuff. And I do think the Steelers may have a little success running the ball against Green Bay, which teams have. And that's just going to make him more of a threat in the red zone because I could see them trying to do a play action pass to him. At 3,100, I mean, I think he's probably going to get 8 to 10 points, and that's all I'm asking for. And he does have the potential to potentially have a 15, 20-point game.
Yeah, I like it. I wish for all the skill players in Pittsburgh, I wish they had a better quarterback. But like you said, while it definitely hurts Chase Claypool, that Ben Roethlisberger looks like this, it might actually work in Freiermuth's favor. Just below him at 3,000, I'm going Cole Kmet. And this is risky because he has 2 receptions over the last 2 weeks as the offense in Chicago has gone to absolute shit. I will say right off the bat, if Dalton or Foles is starting, I feel better about Cole Kmet than I do with Justin Fields, just because, well, unless Matt Nagy decides, hey, maybe we should do rollouts, we should do more play action. Unless he's going to actually cater to Justin Fields, it's going to be a problem as long as he's the quarterback. But what I love about Kmet is not so much him, although I think he has the potential to be a solid tight end. It's this Detroit Lions defense, especially for a guy who might not see a ton of targets. Because Detroit has kind of been amazing against tight ends this year. They've only allowed 5.3 targets to tight ends on average. And on those 5.3 targets, 81.7 yards.
Wow.
Almost 16 yards per target to tight ends this year. They're third in the league in giving up yardage to tight ends. Again, despite 5 targets per game, their DVOA against tight ends, which is the metric that Football Outsiders uses, is 124%. The next highest is Minnesota at 81%. No one else, only one other team is even above 50. Theirs is 124%. They've been incredibly awful at covering tight ends. Clearly, if there's a big play against this Detroit defense, good chance the tight end's going to do it. So give me Cole Kmet. He only needs the one big play. Like we said, at 3,000, we're not asking for a lot. If you get us just close to double digits, that's fine. If you give us like 12, 13 points and get a touchdown, then we're raking it in. So if I'm rolling the dice real low, I like Cole Kmet at 3,000.
Yeah, if you look at most of the entries that do really well every week, there's normally somebody in that 3,000 or very low 4,000 range who doesn't, it's not an impressive, like it's, you know, 12 to 15 points, but what it does is it allows them then to hit more of the 6,000, 7,000, maybe get that one extra guy. So again, I totally co-sign on that. And you just have to, you know, you have to target, kind of those guys. All right, the flexes, because we've already talked about DJ Moore, DeAndre Swift, I'm going to give a bonus and then I'll give into my low tier. I know a lot of people are going to fade Cooper Kupp because he went up $1,000. I'm not. I mean, he right now is the most automatic. He is the number one receiver in football right now. And it's a combination of how good the offense is. It's a combination of how good the quarterback is playing. And it's a combination that they just, I mean, Stafford pretty much, when he needs a play, is going to go to Cooper Kupp. I got, you know, the Tampa Bay game was the second time I've seen them this season. I think in week one versus Chicago, again, he had 10 catches for 108 yards and a touchdown, and that game got out of hand, and he didn't really see any targets or anything late. You can't tell me that that doesn't mean that Indy and Tampa the next 2 weeks were trying to double and cover him and do everything they can to take it away. He saw 23 more targets, turned into 18 more receptions, another 256 yards and four touchdowns. He's hot, 7,800. If you have the money, he is the receiver should be taken. Like, I mean, honestly, like I said, Ridley at 7,000 is my guy, but in most lineups, I'm going to try to get that 7,800. Find the 800 somewhere else where I can have Kupp in that lineup, because I just feel like he's going to score 20 points. I mean, he has become that kind of target. And then the other one, which again, I feel really good about this. I know we talked before, Brandon Ayuk at 5,000 versus Seattle, and maybe I'm a sucker, but I believe in this guy's talent, like really believe in this guy's talent. I said coming into the season, he was the 49 receiver that you want to target in drafts. He's the guy you wanted to have, even over Kittle's. And I think his most recent game, where he saw eight touches turn into 45 yards and a touchdown, just kind of reminded us that, A, he has a nose for the end zone, which is great. He scored in six of his last nine games dating back to last year. But more importantly, that bizarre stat line, week one, appears completely health-related. It appears they're ramping up his usage, because after being on the field for barely 50% of the plays in week one, yep, and week two, that number jumped to 86% week three. And this is the cheapest. I'm telling you, this is the cheapest you will see Brandon Ayuk, because this is such a juicy matchup. Seattle is so bad defensively that he's going to do something. I think the 49ers game plan is going to be to run the ball, but I think you're going to see that their offense is actually more potent with him being the top receiver, because Debo has done a better job this year of catching balls down the field, but that's not really his strength. That is Brandon Ayuk's strength. They need that in this offense. I love Brandon Ayuk at 5,000 this week. I mean, that is dirt cheap for a guy that, remember last year, I think he scored in six out of the last eight games.
No, yeah, I'm with – that's another guy where if you didn't have him, I would have fitted him somewhere, because, like you said, that you going from half the snaps to 86%, like, he's clearly ramping up. And hopefully people haven't forgotten down the second half of last year just how good he was. I think he was like a top 10 or 12 guy for like a good month and a half there. Moving on to the defenses, the top defense, don't overthink it. I don't know why the Bucs are more than the top one against the Patriots. Like, I get it. It's the Bucs against a rookie QB. But we also have the Bills against Davis Mills. So give me the Bills defense as my top tier one at 4,300. They might be the best defense in the NFL. Davis Mills is probably going to be the worst starting quarterback in the NFL on Sunday. So lock that one in if you got the money. Again, if you're playing a Thursday game, I mean, Cincinnati against Jacksonville, you know, like I said last week, we want to be targeting the rookie QBs. Trevor Lawrence is tied with Zach Wilson for the lead in picks. He's thrown seven interceptions in three games. And the Bengals are only allowing 3 yards per carry. So the run game is probably not going to be helping Lawrence out in this game, like Cincy. In that mid-tier, if you're not playing Thursday, Packers against Pittsburgh, because, hey, if we can't face a rookie QB, let's face one who's at the very end of the line in Ben Roethlisberger. The only QBs with lower PFF grades through the first 3 weeks than Ben Roethlisberger: Heinicke, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, Davis Mills. So Ben Roethlisberger is basically on par with the rookies right now. He's that bad. The Steelers, according to Football Outsiders, have the worst run-blocking line in the league. The Packers seem to be rounding into form. They've had multiple turnovers each the last 2 weeks. They had four sacks on San Francisco. And again, the Steelers just have an awful line. Big Ben on a 4th and 10 last week.
Like, took throw to Harris.
Took two steps back. Didn't even like do a full drop back. Just throws it to Harris in the flat. Gets tackled for no gain on a 4th and 10. That's where Big Ben's at. And at the low tier, I mean, as much as I shit on the Lions, I talked about them ad nauseum. How bad they are. You want to target them. Give me the Lions, 2,200 at Chicago. When a team looks as bad as Chicago has over the last really like quarter, game and a half, really, you can't ignore it. And it's not just the 9 sacks that Justin Fields took last week, as bad as that was. The longest, let me ask you, Keith, give me your guess. What do you think the longest pass the Bears have had this year? Just in total yards gained, not even like air yards that they've completed. Longest pass.
18 yards?
Pretty close. 21 yards over 3 games.
They've had
one pass that went over 20 yards. So if Detroit's defense brings anywhere close to the effort they brought against Baltimore, which, I mean, granted, they looked better than they probably were because Hollywood Brown dropped a couple of deep passes. But if they bring close to that effort, this is going to be a good game for them. And you're not asking for a lot at 2,200. They give you 7 or 8. Great. You just saved a grand to go spend somewhere else. So I like the Lions at 2,200.
I'll give one bonus one real quickly. I like the Colts 2,700 versus Miami.
I thought about that one.
Jacoby Brissett is not impressive. The Colts actually have a decent defense. The problem is they haven't been able to score. They've played some good offenses, too. It's not like they've had an easy schedule.
No.
They've played good offenses every week. So I do like the Colts versus Miami, even though that game is in Miami. But that is our picks for week 4. Anything you want to plug, Joe, before we get out of here?
I've just, you know, listen to all the podcasts on IBN. Obviously, Alan and I now have our weekly recap of the Sunday games that we put out on Monday nights. So listen to that. Listen to the morning show. Listen, you've got the wrestling pod that you're about to record. I mean, we're covering it all right now. So just listen up on all the IBN ones.
Yeah, we really appreciate you guys' support. We're glad to hear some people are having success with the lineups. And for Keith Fleming and Joe Matz, this has been the week 4 preview of DFS for the weekly daily fantasy football podcast on the IB Sports Podcast Network.